So I'd like to introduce Andrew Williams. Andrew is a maternal and child health PhD candidate in the Department of Family Science at the University of Maryland School of Public Health. His dissertation work examines the relationship between area deprivation, stress, and preclinical indicators of disease among adolescents. While working on this dissertation, he is also interning at the National Center for Health Statistics, and he is a member of the Population Reference Bureau's 2015-2016 U.S. Policy Communication Training Program. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you. And today I'm going to be talking about spatial relationships in birth outcomes in the state of Maryland. I'd just like to recognize my co-author, Sandy Helferth, is here. And we've done several different iterations of analysis on this data set, so thank you for working with me, Sandy, and all the support you've given me. I don't have anything to disclose. Being a fourth year PhD student is not lucrative, so just keep that in mind. So the purpose of the study was really driven by these geographic variations in low birth weight rates that we see across the state in Maryland. The map on the left, I've mapped out the rates by census tract. And you see in the green is the first quartile, the yellow is the middle 50%, and the red is the top quartile. So red is the top rates, green is the low rates. And we see that across the state there's a lot of variation, and oftentimes there comes into conflict where the green is immediately next to the red as well. So there's some interesting spatial relationships that could potentially exist just by looking at this map. So the three main items we want to discuss today is trying to identify the actual hotspots or clusters of birth outcomes in the state of Maryland. The next is if there are any hotspots that we can identify, we actually want to examine the population characteristics between high rates and low rates, just simply to see kind of who's living there, what are some of the issues the communities are facing. Then at the end, we'll just discuss some programs and policies that could potentially be geographically targeted and culturally appropriate based on what we find in our data. So we have two main research questions, and the first one is simply, do birth outcomes hotspots exist at the census tract level in Maryland? And we're looking at the census tract level. Typically, it's considered a good description of sort of the social climate at a neighborhood type level. So that's why we've chosen to use the census tract level here. And the second is, do population characteristics differ between these high and low birth outcomes hotspots in the state? Two definitions that I'll be using today. The first is a low birth weight rate, and that is the births less than 2,500 grams as a percent of all live births, and that's reported per census tract. And then a hot spot is a tract in which the low birth weight rate of a focal tract is actually statistically similar to all of the tracts around it. You can also think of it as clusters of tracts with low or high rates of low birth weight. And you'll see the note for Queen specification there. I'm actually comparing every single census tract in Maryland to every single neighbor that it has. So if it touches on a border or a corner, it's getting compared to that focal tract. And this occurred for all of about 1,400 census tracts in the state of Maryland. The data set we're using is a linked data set from a few different sources. For birth outcomes data, we aggregated data from 2010 to 2012 from Maryland Vital Statistics. We did this simply to get our count numbers up so we could actually analyze all of the census tracts in the state, because some of them are fairly small for population. For the demographic census data that we have is actually from the 2008-2012 American Community Survey data. And this is a five-year estimate for actually the entire United States. If you're not familiar with this data, the Census Bureau has actually moved on to ACS, and they do this on an annual basis. It's replaced the long-form census data. So now we get more contemporary data as estimates for just about every single geography that the Census Bureau recognizes. And we link these at the 2010 census tract identifiers. And then in order to do these actual spatial relationships, we linked it to shapefile, so we're able to use it in R and ArcGIS for our mapping and our statistical purposes. So that's our data set that we're using. For the analysis, to identify these hotspots, I did two steps. The first was a global Moran's eye, and this is gonna give me one statistic for the entire state, and that's gonna say yes or no, we think there's some clustering going on here. And then once I do that, I use the local Moran's Eye, and that's going to give me a statistic for every single census tract in the state, and that's going to tell me whether it is a potential cluster and whether or not that it's significant, and then we can move on. The next step we took was once we were able to identify high hotspots and low hotspots, we then broke those into groups and did t-tests just to compare what the populations are between those two groups of hotspots. And we did actually exclude some of the tracts with very low populations just because there's unreliable or missing data from ACS or from the vital statistics data. So those are excluded, but that was only, I think, 15 or so tracts that ended up being excluded. So our first result is essentially going back to the same map I showed before and figuring out the global Moran's Eye for this. And for the global Moran's Eye, it does suggest that clustering does occur within the data that we have. And in reading global Moran's Eye, anything above a zero and significant suggests that clustering does happen. So we know that this first map that we looked at, we could kind of tell there might be some spatial relationships in there. And now the global Moran's Eye is essentially confirming our first hypothesis that yes, there is clustering that occurs. So the next step we did was to use local Moran's Eye to get a statistic for every single census tract in the state of Maryland. And if the local Moran's Eye is above zero and also statistically significant, we identified those as hotspot tracts. Now, with local Moran's Eye, it doesn't immediately tell you whether that rate is high or low. So the next step you have to do is essentially, you can plot the data. If you have large amounts of data, sometimes packages like R can actually do a graph for you, and then you can determine what the distribution of those hotspots are. But this is what we identified. We identified 127 tracts across the state that were potentially these clusters or hotspots. So then for this, this is just the distribution of the rates for the identified hotspots. And you can see that we essentially have some clustering at the extremes. You see on the left-hand side of the graph, everything from 6 and below seems to be clustering, and then things from about 11 or 12 and above seem to be clustering as well. And I'm going to go back to this for this map here, because you can see the first quartile is about 6 and below, and the very top quartile is about 11 and above. So that actually matches up with what we found in our hotspots. So there's some clustering at the extremes going on there. So we used that plot of the rates to then identify each tract as either high or low or a non-hotspot. And in the state of Maryland, we had 99 high hotspots, which is about 78%, and the rest were low at about 22%. And I pulled out the maps for the Baltimore area and the Washington, D.C. area on this map, so that's where the vast majority of these high hotspots are actually clustered. So you can see there's the vast majority of them are in urban centers. You see there's one sort of on the western side of Maryland that's a dark spot. So there's one hot spot there as well. And then there is one that you can't see on the map. It was one sort of on the very Atlantic coast of Maryland as well. But the vast majority of these hot spots are clustering right around DC and Baltimore. So the first t-test we did was just looking at the race ethnicity of the census tracts. And this aligns very much with the previous analysis that we've already conducted of this data. So we see that in areas with high rates of low birth weight, there's a very high percentage of Black non-Hispanics in those census tracts. And in the areas with low rates of low birth weight, a very high percentage of white non-Hispanics there. And also a little bit higher Hispanic and Asian populations there as well. In previous analyses, we weren't quite able to fully flesh out the Hispanic and Asian populations in these tracts just because their numbers are pretty small in the state of Maryland, but this gives us a little more information about who is potentially living in these areas that are of concern or not of concern if you're looking at the low birth weight, the low rates of low birth weight group. And then the next we wanted to look at some indicators of socioeconomic status. And you can see for every single indicator we have here, this aligns with what we expected as well, what's shown up in previous analysis of this data and other analyses in the state of Maryland. So we see that for poverty rate, female-headed households, people receiving public assistance, those are all much higher when you're looking at the clusters with high rates of low birth weight. And then for things like high school education and employment, those are much higher in the areas with low rates of low birth weight. And this matches up with what we saw before with our SES measures. This also matches up fairly well with what Patricia Ocampo has done, looking at neighborhood level effects, but that was just focused on in Baltimore. And this is a statewide analysis, but we're seeing the same things in Maryland and in Baltimore and pretty similar across the country as well. So the first point for our discussion is yes, we have identified that birth outcomes are clustered and these hotspots do exist in the state of Maryland. The GMI does suggest that there's spatial autocorrelation in our data, and then the LMI did identify those hotspots. And we do have hotspots for both the high and the low rates. And like I said, there's some clustering at the extremes, which is interesting in and of itself. And then the second point is that we do actually see some differences in characteristics between high and low birth out rates hotspots. For the areas with a high rate of low birth weight, we do see that there is a higher concentration of Black non-Hispanic residents, and there's low SES across multiple indicators. In previous analyses, we had just used the poverty rate. I wanted to look at multiple indicators for this study. It gives you a little bit better idea of maybe some of the issues that are going on in those communities, potentially informing some policy or program discussions and opportunities in the future. And like I said, this does align well with previous work that we've done, other people have done in Maryland, and there's similar studies across the United States, thinking of things that they've done in North Carolina and I think the Cleveland and Columbus area in Ohio that kind of show the same thing, that there's some clustering of these birth outcomes that happen, and they're seeing some similar relationships with the demographics and SES as well. So the implications of this research really speaks to that we can use data that's already available and that's largely publicly available to identify geographic areas for programs and policies. One example comes from the state of Maryland. If anyone's familiar with the Health Enterprise Zones, that is a state program in Maryland. They've identified, I think it's five areas based on things like low birth weight, mortality, Medicaid, and WIC enrollment. And they enrolled essentially different communities, different zip codes for this program. And there's different programs happening in each one of these programs to address the needs of those communities to improve the health. And they used similar methods that I used here by having data that's already available and finding those areas that are at need. When we look at things like the racial ethnic concentration of the areas, we know that these programs probably need to be very community-based and culturally appropriate because there's diverse communities that are living in these different tracts, and we're going to need to have community members involved to make sure that these are appropriate programs founded in those communities to hopefully be successful in the future. When we look at the socioeconomic status and the different indicators that we're looking at, may indicate a lack of access to resources. And the data that we already have has already told us that. A lot of these areas that we've identified, we've known for a long time that they don't have access to resources. This speaks to potentially different kind of interventions that we could focus on for those communities. It also probably speaks to that differences in power that these communities are probably experiencing within the state and probably within those communities as well. And the last point is that this type of research isn't just going to improve birth outcomes, but we need to understand that when we're targeting communities, we're really targeting that whole population. So we may be looking to improve on birth outcomes or cardiovascular disease, but when we're investing in these communities, the main goal is really to be improving the health, the overall health of the populations, improving community capacity to then give more power back to the community so they can actually tackle these issues in the future and see future health and benefits from that as well. And thank you very much for your time. So, and with the analysis I did, this isn't identifying the only areas that have high rates of poor birth outcomes. It's essentially identifying that focal tract, that center tract. So in the bottom left is PG County in Maryland, which abuts right next to Ward 7 and 8 in DC. And so what that's saying is that those dark tracts are going to be related. So all of those tracts around there likely also have high rates of low birth weight as well. And So we understand that these are problem areas. I use census tracts because this is what we were doing for a previous study and this is what my data was at. I wouldn't necessarily target a census tract maybe for a program because they're very small, very homogenous. And your funders might be like, why not target something a little bit more substantial? And actually the area that I identified in Prince George's County actually is one of the health enterprise zones for the state of Maryland as well. So some of these findings weren't necessarily that surprising, but this is what the data is showing and sort of reflecting actually what the state's also doing. And I know there's a health enterprise zone also in, I think it's West Baltimore as well. So they are being reflected on what the state's currently doing as well.
You didn't see a greater increase or
greater decrease? I did, as far as to like their immediate neighbors. Well, if we go back to this map, you can sort of see all of PG County is very red, essentially. It's that PG County is like, there's that big square that is taken out of the Maryland, which is what became DC. So you see there's a lot of red essentially in that same spot. So we would say that a lot of those neighboring tracts have very similar outcomes rates. But in Baltimore, I think it's interesting because you can see that there's hotspots with low rates almost immediately next to hotspots with high rates. And I'm not as familiar with that area of Baltimore. But once you start getting north of Baltimore into Baltimore County, the SES and the population really changes there. So there could be sort of some overlapping of the neighborhoods and maybe some borders of the city and the county there. So.
Yeah,